Good morning, everyone, and a very warm welcome to the Royal London Financial Results 2025 presentation, hosted by Royal London's Group Chief Financial Officer, Daniel Cazot. My name is Dan, and I'm the producer for today. I'd like to just advise everyone that this meeting is being recorded. During the presentation, your microphones are automatically muted, but we will have time for questions at the end of the presentation. Should you wish to ask a question, please raise your hand using Teams, and we will enable your microphone, which you'll then be able to unmute. Please then introduce yourself and ask your question. With that, I'd like to hand over to Daniel Cazot. Please go ahead, Daniel.
Thank you, Dan. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. I'm Daniel Cazot, Group Chief Financial Officer at Royal London, and I'm pleased to be joined today by Ant Lee, our Group Chief Actuary, and Rob Ferguson, our Group Treasurer. Earlier this morning, we published our full year results for 2025. During today's call, I'll be referring to the presentation you can see on your screens. If you pre-registered for the event, you should also have received a copy by email. You can access both the presentation and our results announcement on the investor relations section of our website. Turning to the first slide and the agenda for this morning's call. I will begin with the key highlights from 2025 before taking a more detailed look at our business units. I will walk you through our financial performance, covering our trading position, assets and flows, and concluding with the strength of our balance sheet and capital position. Once we've covered those areas, we'll open up for questions. To start, slide 3 sets out some of the headlines from today's announcement. Our results demonstrate positive momentum across our business. Operating profit increased 18% to 327 million pounds, with life and pensions new business sales reaching 12.12 billion pounds. Our operating profit reflects the strength of our pensions and protection businesses and the impact of a full year of trading from our BPA proposition. Our flagship Government Range investment portfolios are available to 2.2 million workplace pension customers and continue to be a key driver of net inflows, with assets under management in the Government Range increasing to 83 billion pounds from 72 billion pounds at the end of 2024. At a group level, assets under management rose to 199 billion pounds, up from 173 billion pounds at the last year-end. Our capital position remains robust, with the InvestorView capital cover ratio at 188%. In April, we expect to share 199 million pounds with eligible customers through profit share based on 31 December policy values. This is a tangible demonstration of our mutuality in action and will bring the total shared since 2007 to over 2 billion pounds. Turning to slide 4, which summarizes our key financial highlights. As I just referenced, we have continued our strong growth trajectory with operating profit rising to 327 million pounds. You will find a full breakdown of the components of operating profit in the appendix. The transfer to the Fund for Future Appropriations, or FFA, was 167 million pounds, as it was in 2024. The FFA reflects our statutory result and is after the impact of positive economic movements, the allocation of profit share, and in 2025, the one-off impact of the agreement to bring in-house the servicing a number of long-standing customer policies currently outsourced to Capita. Profit share allocation rates were maintained at the same level for the sixth year in a row, and we expect to share 199 million pounds with eligible customers. Looking at flows, gross inflows rose to 42.5 billion pounds, up from 31.8 billion pounds in the same period last year, boosted by flows into liquidity funds, a new multi-asset mandate, and the success of the BPA business. Net inflows increased significantly to 4.1 billion pounds. Our assets under management, which grew by 15% to a record 199 billion pounds, included 6 billion pounds from the acquisition in November of Dalmore Capital, a leading U.K.-based infrastructure asset manager. This acquisition will extend the ability for Government Range customers to access the diversified returns that private assets can offer. The strength of our capital base helped to support both the acquisition of Dalmore and the investment we made in our business in 2025. The investor and regulatory views of our capital cover ratio were 188% and 183% respectively, both above our target levels. Turning to the U.K. on slide 5. We are continuing to see the benefits of building an increasingly diversified mix of products to meet customers' needs. Our U.K. new business sales improved by 11%. This was supported by sales growth of 17% in our protection business which was driven by a rebound in mortgage lending and increased demand for propositions supporting customers impacted by the proposed changes to inheritance tax. Our BPA business also made a significant contribution to new business sales, generating £1.3 billion of premiums during its first full year of trading. Our flagship Govan range, where the majority of our pension customers are invested, continued to see strong demand. Net inflows of £2.6 billion reflects the value that advisors and customers place on its long-term focus and diversification, especially in volatile markets. The increasing breadth of products we offer has played a major role in growing our UK operating profit, which was up 15% at £425 million. We are continuing to invest in our business, and in September we launched our Stocks and Shares ISA, which expands our investment offering and provides individual and workplace pension customers with greater choice for their medium to long-term savings. Our pensions business is the largest contributor to our results, which has been supported by strong growth in workplace pensions over recent years. We are now focused on how we support millions more customers with their retirement savings, and we'll be investing £100 million over the next 3 years in our workplace proposition, allowing us to broaden our offering further. And following Capita's decision to exit its life and pensions closed book business, we have made the decision to bring in-house the servicing of policies currently administered by Capita to ensure long-term service quality for our long-serving customers, with the transition of services being carried out in phases over the next 5 years. Non-operating items include a charge of £51 million as a result of this agreement, which reflects the estimated cost of migrating the operations and the impact on insurance contract liabilities for the change in post-migration servicing costs. These costs are partially offset by the recognition of the present value of the 4.96% of Capita PLC shares pursuant to the agreement, and a further three payments of £10 million each to be received in stages on the first, second and third anniversary of the migration completion. Moving to slide six, we will take a closer look at UK new business sales, which saw significant increases in key product lines. Individual pension sales remained stable year on year at just under £4.8 billion. There was growth in our non-advised income release proposition as more customers chose to move into retirement with us. Through a combination of a changing mix in business and lower charges for customers with smaller pots, new business margins decreased to 1.1%. Workplace pension sales were also largely flat at £4.5 billion, following a significant increase in sales in recent years, which included two larger scheme wins in 2024. We saw a 3% increase in transfer activity, reflecting the continued benefit of the enhancements we have made to our online transfer hub. We welcomed 230,000 new members into new and existing schemes, taking the total to 2.2 million. New business margin decreased slightly to 1.8%. The 17% increase in protection new business sales to £991 million was driven by increased demand for our products, particularly among high net worth customers. We saw continued momentum in mortgage-related business, while increased demand for our new joint life second death term product reflected the strength of our proposition. As a result of the increased volumes and favourable product mix, new business margin increased significantly to 7.7%. Our BPA proposition generated new business sales of £1.3 billion with a new business margin of 3.6%. Individual annuities and other new business sales were £161 million, which included £38 million generated from the launch of our Stocks and Shares ISA. New business volumes for individual annuities were down compared to 2024, as higher interest rates continued to impact annuity take-up and premium levels. Turning to slide seven, our BPA proposition was well received in its first full year of operation, as we secured 18 transactions with external schemes. As the only mutual in this market, trustees and their advisors value the stability and long-term approach of our offering. We also completed a further partial buy-in of £362 million with the Royal London Group Pension Scheme in August. This follows on from the initial buy-in from 2024, and we have now ensured the benefits of more than 6,500 members of this scheme. We are continuing our investment in this new line of business, and in 2026, we expect to enter into the first of our buy-in to buy-out conversions, beginning with the LIVA UK pension scheme and our first external scheme. Turning to our matching adjustment portfolio, due to a combination of both bulk and individual annuities written in 2025, the portfolio has grown to over £3.4 billion, and it continues to be made up of a mix of corporate bonds, gilts, and illiquid assets. In 2025, we successfully applied for permission from the PRA to extend the range of assets we can use in the portfolio to include income-producing real estate, infrastructure, and private placement loans, with a new mandate signed with our asset management business. Nearly 12% of the portfolio is now invested in illiquid assets, with further asset eligibility expansion planned for 2026. The proportion of gilts in the portfolio has increased over the second half of the year, driven by a higher allocation backing new schemes. Moving on to our asset management business and slide eight. Our assets under management increased to £199 billion, supported by a significant increase in net inflows to £4.1 billion. External net inflows were underpinned by flows into our liquidity funds and a new multi-asset mandate with St. James's Place. These were partially offset by net outflows of £2.4 billion from other strategies, including £2.3 billion from global equities and £1.2 billion from sustainable funds. While operating profit decreased to £39 million, this was in line with our expectations as we continued our strategic investment in private assets and property. The decrease also includes the impact on fee revenues from global equity and sustainable outflows across 2024 and 2025, and actions taken to reduce costs and mitigate the overall impact. Our private assets business continued to build momentum during the year, strengthening our ability to source a broader range of assets with attractive risk-adjusted returns, supporting new business inflows, as well as the development of our BPA business. In addition to the acquisition of Dalmore, we also launched three asset-backed securities funds, two public and one private, alongside our growing private placements activity and the first elements of our commercial real estate finance capability. We have launched two collateralized loan obligation funds, one at the end of the year and the second last week. In addition, we have expanded our global footprint through the launch of four funds in Australia. In April, we underlined our long-term track record in sustainable investing, as all eight of the U.K.-based funds in our sustainable range adopted the Sustainability Focus Label under the FCA Sustainable Disclosure Requirements. Turning to slide nine, our business in Ireland continued to deliver strong performance, with growth across both protection and pensions. New business sales increased by 64% to £488 million, and we delivered £17 million in operating profit. New business margin was 3.6%. Our pensions new business sales more than doubled to £286 million for the year, as we saw more financial brokers choosing to recommend our pension products. This growth is reflective of our first full year providing personal retirement savings accounts, which launched in November 2024, with our regular premium product already our most popular product in Ireland. Sales of our protection products grew to £202 million, with significant growth in serious illness business volumes in particular. Digital improvements have been made to our underwriting service, which are helping customers get the cover they need more quickly. Turning to slide 10 and a closer look at our assets under management. We continue to build scale, with record levels of assets under management underlying the appeal of our proposition to clients. The 15% increase in our group AUM to £199 billion was driven by positive market movements of £16 billion, net inflows of £4.1 billion, and the acquisition of Dalmore Capital, which contributed £6 billion. Net flows included £2.2 billion from asset management clients, which underpinned by flows into our liquidity funds and new mandates, such as the multi-asset win from St. James's Place. Asset management inflows were partially offset by outflows in equities and sustainable funds. We generated £1.9 billion from our life and pensions business, driven by workplace pension inflows and bulk buy-in transactions. Our flagship government range continues to grow strongly, attracting net inflows of £2.6 billion, with assets under management reaching £83 billion. Turning to slide seven, our investment portfolio remains well diversified across a number of financial instrument classes. Our total investment portfolio increased to just over £139 billion, a result of fair value movements in equity and bond asset classes and positive life and pensions net flows. The majority of our portfolio is invested in equity securities and fixed income assets. The pie charts demonstrate the breakdown of our non-linked debt security and corporate bond portfolios by asset rating. A significant portion of our debt securities portfolio is in high-quality assets with a credit rating of A or above. In our non-linked portfolio, 77% of our non-linked debt securities and 67% of our non-linked corporate bonds had a credit rating of A or better as at the 31st of December. There have been no significant defaults in our corporate bond portfolio. Moving to slide 12, this sets out more detail of our capital cover. The capital position of Royal London continues to be robust, with a solvency surplus of £2.5 billion. Maintaining this strength in our capital base is an important way of reassuring our customers that we can meet our commitments to them and continue to help ensure progress in our growth ambitions. At the end of December 2025, the investor ratio was 188% and the regulatory ratio was 183%. The investor ratio should reduce gradually over the short term as we write more BPA business and continue to invest in additional capabilities. In the ordinary course of business, we expect to operate with an investor ratio above 180%, although the ratio may fall below that level for a period as a result of investing for long-term growth or as a result of market events. Our hedging programs continue to ensure the stability of our capital position relative to market volatility. The investor and regulatory ratios continue to move in line with each other. The gap between the two ratios may increase slightly if yields fall, and you can see an example of this in the appendix, as well as a breakdown of other capital sensitivities and further details on our Solvency II ratios. Moving to slide 13 and the waterfall chart, which shows the movement in the group's solvency surplus over the period. The investor ratio has reduced from 203% at the start of the period to 188% as at December 2025. The strain of 9% from new business includes a 4% impact from BPA business written in the year. The residual new business strain is lower than in previous years, primarily driven by the increase in protection new business sales. The contribution from our existing book of business more than offsets this new business strain, while also covering continued strategic development, corporate and interest costs. The ongoing investment we are making in our business has led to an 8% fall in the investor ratio. This includes acquiring Dalmore Capital, which accounted for a 5% strain, as well as the launch of CLOs and the impact of the transition agreement with Capita. The group regulatory view movements are in the appendix. Turning to slide 14 and to summarise. Royal London's performance in 2025 underlines the continued strength of our relationships with customers, employers and advisors, and the progress we are making with propositions and services across our business to deliver even more for customers. Our operating profit increased by 18%, reflecting the strength of our pensions business and the enhancements we are making to our protection proposition, both in the UK and Ireland. And our BPA proposition has been well received by trustees and advisors in its first full year. Each of these has made a significant contribution to the 13% growth in our new business sales. Assets under management grew to a record £199 billion, supported by net inflows of £4.1 billion, including £2.6 billion into our flagship government range. We also continued to invest in enhancing our propositions. Our private assets capabilities were strengthened by new fund launches and the acquisition of Dalmore Capital. And we expanded our investment offering through the launch of our stocks and shares ISA, which, like our pensions, qualifies for profit share. Looking ahead, we want to empower millions of people to take better financial decisions, harnessing technology to make it engaging and easy. Our robust capital position gives us flexibility to make continued investment in the business and in our propositions, and to help ensure that we make decisions for the long-term benefit of customers, employers, and advisors. I will pause at this point, and together with the team, we'd be happy to take any questions you may have. I'll now hand back to Dan to begin the Q&A session.
Thank you very much, Daniel. And as Daniel says, We're now entering the Q&A section. So as a reminder, if you do have questions, please raise your hand in Teams. And that's the little button in the top toolbar there. And your microphone will then be enabled for you to unmute, introduce yourself before asking your question. So do please raise your hand if you have a question.
This was Tiago Parente from Fidelity.
Tiago, I got to ask a question.
Hi, sorry, I'm not sure if I got in front of Marcus inadvertently, but I could just fire away a couple of questions. One is on your organic capital generation after profit share is negative again, and I understand you're kind of investing for growth, but you know when can that go back to sort of positive organic capital generation? Do you have any can you share any outlook on that? And the second question is on the private assets, well, the liquid assets, say, appetite. How do you calibrate that? You know, what's the right metric? Is that a percentage of non-linked AUM? And if so, what is sort of the range you're aiming for? Is it as a percentage of, say, own funds? And kind of a sub question, if I may, just you know, what strategies could you be a bit more granular on what strategies you're looking at? And obviously, in some parts of private credit have become a dirty word, but I don't expect you to get involved in, say, middle market lending. But you know, if you could just shed a bit more light on what sort of strategies you're aiming for. Thank you very much.
Yes, certainly, Jerry. Thank you. So look, why don't I start with this and. And if you want to add anything on the capital generation, let's go into this. So look, on the organic capital generation, over the course of the next 3 to 5 years, I would expect us to get into a position where we are certainly net neutral, if not up on organic after taking account of the distributions in the business. And I think what you've got at the moment is, as we called out, 4% strain from BPA. As part of this, we've written 1.3 billion. That was probably a little bit higher than I think where I guided to, where we were targeting about a billion, and we'll be looking at something in that region of probably the 1 to 1.5 as we go forward, depending on that. But we'll maintain our pricing discipline within it. So it's that kind of time frame that we're looking at. Within that, I've also referenced that we're investing in our workplace business. That's not necessarily part of the organic element, but a core part of our growth plans for the future. If I then broaden out a little bit into, well, sorry, Anne, is there anything you'd add on the surplus generation?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as you say, the 4% strain for BPA is our first year. We're not reassuring that as well. It's probably the other key tool that we've got if we want to kind of balance that. But as you say, that 3 to 5 year time period is the sort of kind of period that we're looking at for this to balance, at least, if not tip into positive.
So that's the capital. On the liquid assets, so I think we look at it in a couple of guises, primarily as a proportion of the matching adjustment portfolio in terms of that element of the book. And I'll come back to the rest of the portfolio in a minute. So you'll have seen from slide 7 that as we stand right now, illiquids are just under 12% of the MAP at 3.4 billion. And the proportion of gilts has gone up a bit, and we're looking at various other tools there as well. Yeah, you know, we are targeting getting that balance up in the MAP up into the 20s, if not a bit higher over time, but certainly over the foreseeable period up into the 20s. It will take us a little bit of time to get there, but we're really starting to see the benefit coming through of Arlam having built out its capabilities there. So that's kind of where I'll be looking at in terms of the match adjustment portfolio. The other area where we are looking at private assets as part of the portfolio is within the governed range. So it's not particularly within so that's part of the link portfolio. So I'm not really expecting us to have any proportion of the non-linked elements outside of the MAP as part of our portfolio. Within the govern range, it's pretty low at the moment, other than in property. So about 10% of the govern range is invested in real estate, has been for a while, and certainly before Mansion House Accords or otherwise. I expect that that proportion will stay broadly similar for the moment, and we will be investing more into the government range, but that's as the government range grows rather than necessarily changing the allocation. That will be a mix of equity and credit. So Dalmore is primarily in for equity, and we'll be looking at how we facilitate that into the government range. And then RLAM has launched some new funds as well, and we'll be looking at those allocations as well. But that's to say, very much in the linked portfolio. And in terms of strategies, so our portfolio at the moment is more geared towards UK and Europe, which is what you'd expect given where our capabilities are rather than the US. It's certainly not particularly geared towards technology lending either. In terms of strategy at the moment, it's moved into private placements, as I referenced. We have a broader set of approvals from the PRA, and we received approval for our matching adjustment investment accelerator yesterday, actually. So we have an ability to test some new classes, but that's sort of work in progress at this stage. So is there anything you'd like to come back to on any of those points?
No, that's great. I mean, I expect the private placement assets you're targeting will be investment grade.
Yes, very much so. Yeah, everything investment grade into the map.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Tiago. Marcus Rivaldi, over to you. Feel free to unmute your microphone and ask your question.
Morning, everyone. thanks for taking my question. So I just want to dig a bit more into this whole capital debate as well, please. So you're obviously indicating that sort of 3 to 5 years to get to net neutral. The 4% drag, is that a sort of sensible sort of figure that we should be thinking about? I appreciate that is also probably a function of competition in the marketplace. We've had another bulk annuity specialist talking about how very tough market competitions meant that, you know, effectively its solvency ratio has been diluted over the course of the year because of an inability to really reprice for compressed credit spreads in the year. So I'm just thinking about that 4%. Is that a sort of sensible number to be thinking about over that 3 to 5 year period? Secondly, on the BPA, just on your ambition, really, because there's a huge amount of investment going into the business in terms of building out capabilities to be able to really, you know, deliver on the BPA market opportunity. And I'm just wondering whether sort of a $1.5 billion per annum is really what you're really thinking about, or whether that's a prelude to really wanting to be doing an awful lot more. And then, again, linked to sort of build out capabilities, obviously investment in Dalmore, do you think you're there yet, and to what extent would further investment in inorganic growth to sort of build out capabilities such as Dalmore, should we expect more of that in the future? I'll pause there, but one more question, but maybe just on those ones to start with.
Yeah, that's fine. So look, why don't I take them in sort of second, first, third, because I think I'll link them together. So To your point about more BPA, I think the answer is this is not a prelude to a bigger play into the BPA market. I think we can see where our brand capabilities, servicing excellence, and longevity risk capacity in our balance sheet gives us an opportunity to operate in the part of the market we're currently operating in, which is certainly in the sub £500 million scheme. If you look across the 18 that we've written this year, excluding the internal scheme, you know, the majority have been in the sub 150 and sub 100, but with one at the slightly larger end. We will maintain pricing discipline within that. There's probably a little bit more capital strain as we've started within that, but we are not going to chase volume at the expense of capital. And I suppose if you look at the breadth of our business, if we chose to back off the BPA business because we couldn't find the volumes at the right price for a period, then we will do so. It's not something that we want to compromise on in the context of our broader business. So that would be my core bit. And then I suppose if I link it to capital trajectory, and I suppose what sits behind that. And I think it links to what Ant said. So at the moment, we are writing all of that BPA business with a lower mix of illiquids against it. We benefit hugely from the fixed income capabilities within RLAM. It's one of its core capabilities that it's grown from. But we need more illiquids in there, which will improve our return on capital over time. But there is no longevity reinsurance in there at all. So all of that longevity strain is going back through. And it does diversify well, but it has a strain still. We have capacity at those current volumes to write with no reinsurance for a good few years. But we are exploring whether we want to reinsure now, rather than waiting until we've exhausted that capacity. So I expect that strain will start to temper over the next few years. But that's something we're looking at over the course of 2026, alongside building the buy-in to buy-out capability. And then on your last question, on inorganic, I think we have the core of what we want. But I suppose, as ever with this, you know, we will continue to review opportunities as they come through. And to market, we are not going to chase things unnecessarily, as you'd expect. But there may be opportunities for bolt-ons as well. But I'm very conscious as well that, you know, whilst we've completed Dalmore, it was only in November, and there's some integration work that we need to do as part of that, and they've got to get some new fund launches completed as well. So I don't want to bite off more than we can chew either. I'll pause there. Marcus, did you want to come back on any of that?
Yeah, can I come back on one, and then I've got a follow-up. So just quickly on the 500 million sort of and below target market, how much of the total available market, and I think people talk about approximately 800 billion left to go, so to speak, of DB liabilities. How much of that would be in that 500 million sort of range, would you say? Is that the biggest part of that the market by liabilities?
It's not the biggest part of the market by liabilities, because I suppose the big schemes really do dwarf. I mean, broadly, this is more doing the other way around. I mean, we're quite happy being in the low single digits market share territory, and that really does accord to where those schemes are. I think there is, and others are obviously doing this as well, there is an important bit about relationships with some of the advisors at that smaller level, and being able to show that you can run the process quickly and easily. You know, frankly, the costs of underwriting a scheme, whilst they vary by scheme size, they certainly don't move in proportion to the scheme size. I think we have an advantage of building some of this from scratch, and we have very much done that with a view towards making the process quick, easy, and efficient for smaller schemes. Hopefully that helps.
Thank you. Yeah, it does. And so, just my final follow-ups. Hope you don't mind me just asking this, but so when we look at the sort of the guide, where how low do we think the solvency ratio moves? And you guided that there potentially moves below 180. But have you any sense where you think that could bottom out? And linked to that, given the need to invest in the business, given the growth strains, I just want to ask a bit about the profit share, how you arrive at that every year, and to what extent this is almost like a ratcheting number, whether effectively you set at 199 this year up from last. Is this something that you expect to keep growing whilst you're also investing in the business and in terms of capabilities and building out the BPA, or is that something that you can sort of pull back a bit to ensure that the solvency ratio, you know, doesn't fall too far?
Yeah, great questions. So just on the capital side, so just a reminder of our capital piece for everybody on the call. So we have an acceptable range that starts at 165, but broadly in the normal course of business, we target above 180. The reason I made the reference to it might dip below, I suppose, just to take an example, you know, and you referenced it earlier in your questions, you know, we've acquired Dalmore in 2025. It's got a 5% capital strain. It's quite a goodwill heavy acquisition, given it's in the asset management business rather than where we've historically acquired in the life business, which generally has a lower strain as you bring the models together. So that 5% strain will take some time to come back as the goodwill amortizes and as we get the return as the new funds kick in. So that's a little bit part of why I make that comment. In terms of where the number might be, and I exclude sort of market-based shocks within that. I mean, we are well hedged, but they will have a bit of an impact at points in time if anything comes through. Would I be surprised if we dropped into the high 170s at some point over the next few years? Probably not, and it wouldn't concern me either. Equally, we may not. We may stay above the 180, and I think it will depend on the decisions we make as we go through that. If I was guiding you, I think we would be looking at taking some of the capital management actions that we can do if we thought we were going to drop below 175 is broadly where I would look at it. But it depends a bit on the reason why, and obviously we would be open about what those reasons were and whether they were investment driven or driven by something else. Yep. If I link that to profit share, so the way that we look at profit share, partly the calculation, I know you know this, but just for everybody's benefit, the 199 is effectively the mathematical answer of the allocation of the profit share rates that we've applied to the underlying policy values. And the rates vary between legacy with profits business and new with profits business through the government range, as it effectively is. And it's a BIPS allocation to it. The mix of that is changing quite a lot. The proportion that's in with profits is, or legacy with profits is coming down, and the element that's in the unit-linked business is going up as the book moves. As part of this, and maybe this gives you a little bit of comfort about our future capital position. So the board looks at profit share going forward on sustainability over the long term. Consistency is quite important for our customers, that the rate isn't bouncing up and down. It's a core part of our proposition, but that it's very much done on a long-term view. If we felt that our capital position was not sustainable over the medium to long term, then the board would absolutely be looking at changing the level of profit share that we allocated, and that would effectively be looking at changing the profit share rate. I think it's fair to say, as we stand right now, the board had no concerns in approving the profit share rate as currently stands in the context of our future capital projections.
Thank you so much.
That's right. Do you want to come back on any of that, or does that give you what you need?
No, very, very clear. And that makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks, Daniel. Thank you, Marcus. And Fabian, over to you. Feel free to unmute and ask your question.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. I had three questions, please. The first one is, as you mentioned, that you'll have one of your BPA deals going from buy-in to buyout this year. I wanted to understand if you could explain a bit the financial impact of that, and if you expect the other 17 buy-ins will also go to buyout. The second question is, so when you mention the capital management action and if you go around 175 and so on, and seeing that in 3 to 5 years of BPF funding will have a bit of a strain, do you expect you would kind of fund part of this potentially with some subordinated debt? And the last question is, so you've been mentioning the potential longevity reinsurance, also the increase in the liquids to about 20%. So have you done any kind of math around the potential lift up you could have provided if you had done those actions on the capital generation for the deals you have written this year? Thank you.
Yeah. On your first question on BPA buy into buy, that's probably quite a quick answer. So in terms of the cost and impact and impact on our capital of doing that, I think the answer is it doesn't really have a substantial impact in terms of when to point we have effectively invested in building the capabilities to do it. At the point at which it shifts over, yes, there'll be some minor bits that I bet where we see the actual final data might need some, but I don't expect any significant financial impact of moving from buy-in to buy-out. And in terms of the other 17 schemes, the simple answer is yes. Differing timeframes. Part of our approach is making sure that we don't end up creating a bottleneck of schemes that all might want to move from buy-in to buy-out in the same quarter. So we've been quite mindful of that as we've been looking at it. In terms of the capital management actions, so the kind of things that we're referencing or we would look at within our framework, and it probably linking bits up. Longevity reinsurance is part of that, or broadly, frankly, reinsuring other parts of the book as well if we thought we needed to from a capital perspective. We obviously look at our hedging levels and line within that, which provides different levels of, depending on the hedging we have, stability versus absolute ratio. And I suppose we just talked about profit share. If we felt that our capital ratios weren't sustainable over time, we would look at our profit share as well as you'd expect. In terms of subordinated debt, at the moment, and Rob, you may want to add to this, you know, I don't foresee us needing to raise debt in the context of writing new business, but that's probably a little bit different to looking at our debt portfolio over time. Do you want to add anything, Rob?
Yeah, look, I mean, we don't comment on our funding plans, which I hope you appreciate, but yeah, I think very much looking at the capital management actions, issuance of subordinated debts very much down the list, whilst appreciating that we do have a bullet maturity in circa over 2 years' time. So I think in terms of when we get to that point, clearly we have a funding framework which looks at a number of different areas that protects and maintains our ratings with both Moody's and S&P, leverage, interest cover, number of different elements that make that up. But I think it, as with our kind of RT1 issuance, I think I would envisage that we'd be looking at, you know, a replacement and looking at all kind of options. And, you know, there could be some tweaking around the size, but I wouldn't envisage that the primary direction for, say, quantum would be in order to deal with a BPA strain. I think that would be very much further down the list of thoughts.
Thanks, Robert. And then on your last point in terms of sort of interaction of how we look at BPA, longevity risk, illiquids, et cetera, I mean, look, this is very high level mass, but broadly speaking, if we'd had a different mix of illiquids and we had some reinsurance in there, I suspect you could probably assume that our capital strain from BPA would roughly halve. Is my very high level sort of way of looking at it. There's obviously different decisions in there, and it depends on the market circumstances, the point of where spreads are at, but that's roughly how I'd look at it. So then you wanted to come back on in there, Fabian?
No, I think that's pretty clear. Thank you. And I mean, on the last point, is there, because you've been mentioning the increased competition and so on, and I was wondering, where do you draw the line in terms of, is it still interesting to write new BPA business, and what the metrics are you using there?
Yeah, so look, we, probably similar to others, we target a return on capital that is certainly in double digits, and that's how we look at it. And as we stand now, I have no concerns on that, and we will maintain that pricing discipline. We are not going to chase volume if we can't hit the levels of return we need.
That's perfect. Thank you, Karen. Thank you, Fabian. Thanks, Daniel. And Anitava, please feel free to unmute your microphone and ask away.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. Just one quick question on that matching adjustment portfolio. You stated it's around 3.2 billion pounds, whereas your BPA volumes are 1.3 billion pounds. So what is this excess matching adjustment portfolio for? Is it kind of some kind of future assets that you are keeping to write BPA business or annuity business?
Yeah, that's right. So let me give a bit of context. So there's three elements in the matching adjustment portfolio. There's the business we have written in BPA, so it's 1.3 billion this year, a little bit last year. We also write annuities for vesting pension policies in the CIS fund that have guaranteed annuity options in there. We've been doing that for the last few years. That is somewhere between 150 and 300 million pounds a year of business that we write into the main fund from business that vested in the CIS fund. So that's been building up over the last few years. And then the final element is our internal pension scheme. So we have already transferred the LIVA UK scheme through a transaction and two tranches of the Royal London Group pension scheme. In there, I think the if you take the internal pension schemes, just over £1 billion, I think, from those three elements as well. So it's those three parts, but it's all annuity business.
Okay, thank you. So just to understand that BPA plus annuities, what could be the approximate AMU, the combined AMU?
Sorry, I couldn't quite hear the combined what, sorry?
So combined AMU of BPA plus annuities business as of December 2025, what's the combined AMU?
As in the combined assets of those business? Those...
Yes, correct.
Yes, I mean, that. I just want to make sure I'm answering your question. The combined volumes we've written during the year or the combined assets of those businesses at the end of the year?
Yes, correct. Combined assets of fund value of both BPAs and annuities.
Yeah, so I mean, that is broadly the $3.5 billion that's in the MA portfolio is exactly that is the business.
Okay, understood. Thank you so much.
No problem at all.
Thank you, Amitabh. And Daniel, that appears to be the last of the questions. No other hands are raised.
Great. Well, look, thanks for hosting, Dan, and thank you everybody for joining this morning, and thank you for the questions. Really appreciate it. I'm happy to pick up any others through the investor relations team and Rob and his team. As needed otherwise. But thank you all very much indeed, and have a good weekend.